numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly. And I do mean proudly. Brought to you by BetMGM. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. How you doing, Kelly?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man.
Winner winners for you last night.
Yeah, man. That ends up being probably the most profitable series of my life, I would imagine, in the NBA. When all is said and done, as we were focused on the shiny object that was people who had Celtics bets after game three. And I think we should revisit that today because it's such a great gambling. It's such a great sports betting case study, right? Where all things can be right at the same time and people can make their decisions on stuff. We'll get into it. The Heat and the Celtics, what a series. What an outcome. Everything. Drew Dinsick will join us to discuss what could have been for his Celtics bet. Did he hedge? Did he grab some bucket? I hope everybody who did have that bet on the Celtics to win the series after game three, I hope they made some back. I would imagine some did, some did not. We'll see if Drew did. Mark Borchardt talk baseball with us. Bradley Porras joins us to talk college baseball. Now that selections are done, the selection show is done, we have the field of 64 broken out into 16 different clusters, if you will. We'll get his thoughts on where our futures land, what additional bets he thinks should be made, if any. We'll get to that momentarily. And Chrissy Andrews joins us in studio. But let's start. And by the way, the Vegas Golden Knights get it done, too, against the Dallas Stars. So we now know who are both in the Stanley Cup Finals and the NBA Championship as South Florida reigns supreme currently. Kelly, your old stomping grounds.
Yeah, man. Heat and Panthers down there. What did I see? There's been 10 times where there's been teams from the same city or same area.
It is the 10th time that a metro area has had teams playing for the NBA and NHL titles. This would be the first time that a metro area would win both. It's never happened before. So on the 10th try, we'll see if it happens. Boston, by the way, becomes the first city to lose a home game 7 to an 8 seed in both hockey and basketball in the same season. So there's that. Last night, the details. 26 seconds in, Jason Tatum steps on Gabe Vincent's foot, tweaks ankle, never the same. Never the same. But oh, Boston Celtics fans and backers who want to use that as an excuse, please don't. Gabe Vincent didn't play a game in the series. Tyler Hero didn't play at all, not to mention Oladipo. It happens. Took Miami 2 minutes, 51 seconds to score. Celtics led 9-4. Heat went on an 11-2 run to lead 15-11. 18-6 run to lead by 7 at the end of the quarter. 22-15. Boston's lowest scoring first quarter of the season. 15 points. Martin had 7-5 already at the end of the frame. Jaylen Brown had 8 for the Celtics. Celtics, at that point, at the end of the first quarter, were not only 6 of 23, 26.1% from the field, but they were 0 of 10 from 3. Oh, how many times on this show have we said that?
That was wild.
Have we said the only stat we need is three-point shooting? Now, I know that didn't happen in Game 6. We never said 100% of the time. We said about 95% of the time. All you need to know is, what's the three-point shooting stats? By the way, the Celtics started 0 for 12 from behind the arc before they hit one. Second quarter, Miami immediately went up 12. Seemed like the beginnings of each quarter, Miami had flurries. Miami immediately goes up 12, 27-15. Now is a 19-4 run or a 23-6 run, whichever you want to choose. He jacked up the lead to 17 at 38-21. Celtics did get it as close as 8 in the quarter, but the Heat settled into an 11-point lead at the half. Martin led all scorers, 14 points, 7 boards, 6 of 10 shooting, 2 of 3 from behind the arc at the half. More on Caleb Martin and the MVP vote coming up. Jaylen Brown, 13, Tatum, 7 for the Celtics. Celtics were 4 of 21, 19% from 3 at halftime. Game 7s since 1955, teams trailing by 10-plus at the half were 4 and 40 straight up. Make it 4 and 41. Third quarter, Heat immediately go on a 7-2 burst to start the quarter to go up 16. Celtics did cut it in half, though, to 8 in response. All in the first 3:31 of the third quarter, Tatum visibly hobbled, though. And the Celtics would get it to within 7 in the quarter, but never closer, though they had their chances. There was a moment there where you thought, maybe. Heat led by 10 after 3. Martin at that point, 23 points, 8 boards, 10 of 14 shooting, 3 of 4 from behind the arc. Butler, 19-5-5. And it was Derek White who led the Celtics with scoring at that point with 18. Celtics at that point, 7 of 28 from 3, 25%, 11 of 13 from the line. The Heat had only shot two free throws, made them both all game in the first three quarters. Celtics had 11 turnovers, Heat 5. Fourth quarter, first sequence, and this was KD bar the door. First sequence, Tatum misses a bunny. Martin on the other side of the court, dagger three. Heat get the next four to match their biggest lead of the game at 17. Honestly, that was it. Over. Heat would lead by as many as 23. They won by 19, 103-84. Butler, 28, 7-6. Martin, 26-10, 11 of 16 shooting, 4 of 6 from behind the arc. Jimmy Butler by a 5-4 vote is your MVP. Again, bookmark that. Tatum, 14 in defeat. Brown, 8 turnovers. Jaylen Brown after the game, we failed. I failed. We let the whole city down. First time Celtics held under 9. First time Celtics were held under, what did I write here? Oh, under 90 points in a game this season. They end up with 84. The Heat ended up 48.8% from the floor. The Celtics, 39%. Three-pointers, again, here it is. The Heat, 14 of 28, 50%, which is the fourth highest Game 7 three-point field goal percentage, three-point percentage in NBA playoff series history. The Celtics, 9 for 42. You live and die by the three. 21.4%. The last two games in this series, the Celtics, 16 of 78 from behind the arc. Celtics end up 5-6 at home this postseason. Heat, ninth win as an underdog this postseason. That's tied for the most in the last 30 seasons. The Celtics, their eighth loss when favored this postseason. That's the most in 30 seasons. By the way, Kirk Goldsberry showing the Celtics' lowest scoring games this season. 92 was their previous low against Orlando back in December. That's the largest Game 7 road win, a 19-point win in conference finals since 1984. The previous high since then was 9. That's under the new playoff format, or the latest playoff format. The Heat, the fifth team to beat the top two teams in win percentage before the finals, and the second eighth seed to get to the NBA Finals. Again, the Knicks in 1999 in a lockout-shortened 50-game season were the other. So this is really the first legit one. And the first play-in team, of course, to reach the NBA Finals, who trailed the Bulls in the game for the eighth seed by 3 points with under 3 minutes left and went on a 15-1 run to seal their playoff position. Now, I don't want to revisit, Kelly, the speech I gave after Game 3. But I do think the big sort of macro betting thing is that the regular season took us off the scent of the Heat. That I think NBA analytics people who delve into season-long NBA analytics, I think the Heat might be the tip of the iceberg in terms of load management. In other words, we talked about this after baseball season. After baseball season, which is a 162-game schedule, and then the format is such in the postseason where it's like the Billy Bean, my stuff, I'll say, doesn't work in the postseason. He didn't use the word stuff. I think the format is such in baseball that you're taking this massively long regular season and you are compromising it in the format of the postseason more and more that you're going to have this dissonance between regular season performance and playoff performance. In the NBA, it's not the format. In the NBA, it's load management. It's who teams are playing against you. And I think the Heat, some people say, oh, well, the Heat are the exception. Well, they are now. That's the one that's manifested. But I think I think what we'll see in coming years is more examples of this. And getting back to the bets made after Game 3, and this is the real gambling thing I want to talk about again, which is those that made the bet on the Celtics to win the series and become the first team to come back from a 0-3 deficit, a 3-0 deficit in a best of 7 in the history of the NBA. Mathematically, that is a fine bet. Both things can be true. It can be a good bet mathematically where there is an edge, because if you ran it through a parlay calculator based on what the Celtics spreads were going to be, what their money lines were going to be in all of those games, mathematically it's a good bet. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to play every bet where there's a mathematical edge on. So even someone like me who loves, hey, look, I think you'll be more successful in sports betting the more edges you play and the more you bet on, the bigger the edge. But you don't have to play all of them. And this was one that I wasn't willing to play because, as you might remember, Kelly, what I said back then was, I just don't believe the Celtics are the team that can win 4 in a row. Hey, they almost did. But they probably shouldn't have won Game 6. It was a miracle that won them that. And this one, they just got rolled in.
Got waxed.
Absolutely rolled in. And the reason for why I said that a few games back was, They're too schizophrenic. They're too schizophrenic from one game to the other to expect this outfit to cull together four straight games was just too much. And in the end, that was the case. But that doesn't mean the bet wasn't bad for those people who did. And again, unlike elsewhere in the gambling world, I wish that everybody could win. I did have a Heat series bet, so obviously in this case, I didn't hope that that would get home. But if I didn't, I would have for those people. And again, I hope that everybody who had that bet did make some back with some kind of play yesterday, whether it was pre-flop taking the Heat plus the points, or you would try to hit both of your bets. That would have been the most simple one, or perhaps in-game, because that was an in-game fest on the Heat for many of us yesterday, even if you didn't have it pre-flop. I mean, you could have laid any. There was not a spread in that game. I don't know about the last couple minutes, but up until the last few minutes when they probably took it off the board at the very end, there was not a spread that you couldn't have won money on the Heat in yesterday. And so that would have become, you know, and that was part of the speech three games ago, which is the cognitive dissonance of believing the Celtics are this elite team that you saw over a full regular season, having your bets on the Celtics and then not being able to break out of that. So just it's just a fascinating sort of gambling case study every which way. And the Heat are on their way to the NBA Finals against the Denver Nuggets, where the Nuggets are close to a $4 favorite and they're big 8-point favorites already in game number one. You think, though, this series price and the game price are correct, Kelly?
Yeah, but what the hell do I know?
Well, Kelly's... The Heat have broken his brain.
I thought the Celtics and Bucks were better teams, too, so...
We'll get into more of this and the MVP discussion. Drew Dinsick, who did make those Celtics bets, next. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers Game proudly brought to you by BetMGM. It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, the BetMGM Sports app. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Drew Dinsick standing by. Whale Capper to talk both NBA and tennis with us at the French Open. As far as the Eastern Conference MVP, the Larry Joe Bird MVP award, it was given to Jimmy Butler by virtue of a 5-4 vote over his teammate Caleb Martin. Tim Bontemps, Doris Burke, Reggie Miller, Ben Rohrbach, and Ira Winderman, all going for Jimmy Butler. Tim Reynolds of the Associated Press, John Schumann, Joe Varden, and Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe, all going with Caleb Martin. A lot of bettors outraged. Listen, on the show yesterday, let's start here. On the show yesterday, I said the best bet on the board currently right at this moment heading into Game 7 is probably Caleb Martin 25-1 to win the Eastern Conference MVP, saying, you know, hey, well, I'll let it speak for yourself. This is me asking Raheem Palmer from The Ringer yesterday if he thought that was, in fact, the best bet on the board.
We were saying
yesterday,
before the break, Caleb Martin to win MVP of this series at 25-1 is probably the best bet that exists on the board right now in the event that the Heat do win, in the event that no one else, namely a Jimmy Butler, goes off tonight and is clearly, you know, the driving force of the win tonight. You agree with that?
I don't. And the reason why is because I think these voters, they tend to, you know, they want to vote for stars. You look at the, like, honestly, the Western Conference Finals. I felt like Jamal Murray should have won MVP, but Jokic still got it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it's a narrative of war. And then also when it comes to Game 7s, how you perform in Game 7 is everything. You go back to the 2016 Finals. I mean, if the Warriors win that, guess who's the final MVP? Draymond Green. So Game 7, like tonight's Game 7 is going to mean everything in terms of who wins that award.
So here it is again, just like we were talking about in the first segment, the ability to hold two thoughts in your head at the same time. I think the Boston Celtics bets that people made after Game 3 was a sound mathematical bet. It doesn't mean that I wanted to bet it. Here, I understand, again, and I said on the show yesterday, I thought 25-1 was the best bet on the board yesterday, Caleb Martin to win MVP. It doesn't mean that was bad advice.
It also doesn't mean that people who had Caleb Martin, in my opinion, should be outraged. And I'll relate it back to my 2021 MVP, NL MVP bet that I had on Juan Soto, which Bryce Harper ended up edging him. And I had Juan Soto at 100-1. I wanted Juan Soto to win it and thought that Juan Soto had a case to win it. But so did Bryce Harper. And I think there's a difference between being outraged and being bummed. And I think this falls under the category of being bummed if you have Caleb Martin. I'm not sure you really are justified in being outraged because Jimmy Butler has a case as well. We bring in Drew Dinsick at Whale underscore Capper. He is the co-host of not only the Deep Dive podcast, which he does with Andy Molitor, but also, of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge podcast. Good morning to you, Drew. How are you, man?
I'm well, and this is an interesting discussion. The advanced statistics say it's a coin flip, a slight favoring Jimmy for the seven games you have in the series. I think the 5-4 vote reflects it was close.
Yeah.
And I agree. Like, if you got a huge price on Martin, you're probably like, oh my God, we just got his true shooting in this series was 738.
Incredible.
His effective field goal percentage was 727. These are absurd numbers.
Absurd.
And so basically you caught, you know, incredible variance and still couldn't get a ticket home, which is, you know, that's the way it goes.
He shot 60.2% from the field and 48.9% from three. I did not misspeak on any of that. Plus,
yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah, plus 9.6 net rating when he sat. The Heat were minus 4.2. But listen, Raheem was right. They tend to go with the big name. But I think that the vote accurately reflects how close it was. And again, I think, yeah, are you bummed about it? You probably should be bummed. Do you really have this massive outrage being justified? I don't think so.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No, this is not an injustice.
Yeah.
This is not a, no, no. And honestly, if you want to make money betting the NBA playoffs, you just take unders in game 6 and 7. I don't really have any other answers for you here.
Well, so let me ask you. So you had famously, you came on here and I respected your bet very much after game 3. You're like, look, mathematically, this is a good bet. And it was mathematically a good bet. Were you able, the question for everybody who made those bets, either to win this series on the Celtics or to win the NBA Finals, were you able to make some money back? Did you take the Heat pre-flop? Did you make Heat in-game bets? However you did it, did you?
I let it ride on Celtics, but I was biggest bets I've made in the going back to the Super Bowl on game 6 and game 7 unders. So
there you go.
I'm good, pretty satisfied that we got there.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Pretty satisfied with some of the prices. The second half of game 6 was the real one. Like that opened 106.5. I made it like 99. I don't remember seeing a second half bet with that big of an edge in a while. Games have thankfully avoided overtime there. That could have gone. I would still be licking my wounds if that game had gone to overtime. And the second half under would have been under serious jeopardy. But yesterday, same deal. Opened at 99. I made it 95. This is it's wild when you get into these late in these series and you can see the player fatigue creeping into the way that the shots were hitting the front room for the Celtics the entire first half of that game. They were obviously going to play their guys into the high 40s to try to, give them the best chance to win in advance. And, that there was just nothing there in the legs as you got deeper into that game. And, you're out of the offensive adjustments. It becomes a lot of, hey, give this guy the ball in this possession and hope you make something happen towards the end of the shot clock. And possessions fall, efficiency drops, and the unders are just too anchored to what you see in games 1 through 4. And, if you played all of the game 6 and game 7 unders to this point in the playoffs, you're sitting at 9-2. And that's not an outlier historically.
Good for you, man. I'm glad you cashed on those and cashed big. So the Heat are 8-point dogs in game 1. They're, the Nuggets are nearly a $4 favorite for the series. Do you, because it's all this, it's one thing to for me to think all these things about the Heat. Now, I think they've met their match in the Nuggets. I'm curious if you think those prices accurately reflect what the state of this series and game 1 ought to be.
So for the content generating standpoint, I have nothing interesting to say about this series because I think these prices are about right.
Me too.
It was easy to kind of be, you know, kind of faux market outrage at the prices between the Heat and the Celtics series for lots of reasons. But the Celtics are a high variance team. They live and die by the 3-point shot. They died by the 3-point shot, in fact, in the Eastern Conference Finals. And the Nuggets are a very different offensive engine. I don't think the Heat match up well against the Nuggets at all, particularly their defensive style against the Nuggets and what they like to do offensively. I think there's in the back of my head, if you want to know what I'm cheering for, I'm hoping that there is a bit of rust, so to speak, on the Nuggets in game one, and that somehow the Heat steal game one, and then everybody's like, the Heat, they're doing it again. You can't quantify a playoff Jimmy Butler like that. Eric Spoelstra, did you see that adjustment Eric Spoelstra made where he turned Caleb Martin into Kawhi Leonard? Like, how? Oh my God, what a magician.
Drew with a little, you know, little, yeah, soaking in a little... A little bitterness, yeah.
Get him.
No, I would love for there to be a, oh my God, the Heat are doing it again.
I'd actually be with you on that one. Yeah.
It would be great because ultimately, I would love a game six in this series. I'd love a game seven. It would be fun if we could go back to the well there, especially with this opening total, like around 220. You know, if you could get a game six or game seven total under 206 to 207, count me in. No, I think realistically, this is probably 4-1. Looking at my numbers, I'm not quite up to 400 for the Nuggets. I'm at minus 350. I think you add in a little bit of potential that the Heat are limping in here. And I know they're going to get reinforcements in the form of Tyler Hero, whatever he's able to provide at this point. But there's a lot of other kind of fatigue and issues going on with the Heat as a roster. So, you know, they may be drawn completely dead in game one. And if that's the case, and this turns into a runaway here, then a short series would be probably the most likely outcome.
Yeah. Heat, again, I said this several times during the series. They are, if there was no such thing as a pesky NBA Finals, right, that final best of seven, they'd be the biggest dynasty in all of American sports. I mean, this is their seventh NBA Finals appearance in the last 13 years.
Wow.
The sixth, pardon me. Seven Eastern Conference appearances, but six Eastern Conference titles, six NBA Finals appearances in the last 13 years. If you extend it back to 2006, it's more than anybody. It's seven, even more than the Warriors in terms of appearances. But they're seeking their, you know, fourth title of all time. That's the problem. And I think I'm with you. I think they're overmatched in this one. Tennis with Drew. Any other basketball thoughts? On the other side, Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Take your sports betting game to the next level this summer with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up now for only $9.99 and get access to everything we do, including daily pro picks on all the summer action, including NFL and college football futures, premium analysis from our team of top handicappers and industry experts, 24/7 video access, and pro tools, like our exclusive betting split showing you where the public and sharp money is going to give you an edge. Start betting smarter. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe. And sign up now. We get tweets at Beating the Book. This is from Jesse Welch. He said, there are maybe two things in the world that I'd ever consider rioting in the streets over. The NBA Awards voters is 100% one of them. Caleb Martin deserves that award. Yeah, Jesse, with all due respect, man, he could have won it. You have a right to be bummed about it. But did you forget about games one and two? Jimmy Butler, 35, 5, 7. Six steals. Butler 27, 8, 6, and 3 steals and 2 blocks. The Heat won both of those games in Boston. Game 3, Gabe Vincent was really the guy. Game 4, I mean, again, Martin super efficient. Butler 29, 9, and 5. But that was a Heat loss. Game 5, nobody did anything. Duncan Robinson led all the Heat scores with 18. Game 6 and 7 were Martin really shined. Remember game 6, the Heat lost. Ultimately, even though Martin was outstanding, and as great as Martin was last night, he absolutely was the driving force in spurts of that game last night. Like, he was everything for long stretches of that game. But Butler in the end ended up with, you know, 24, 11, and 8 in game 6. Oh, terrible shooting, by the way. But 28, 7, 6, 3 steals last night.
super inefficient. But I mean, to forget about games one and two, just and to act like this was some runaway vote is just to me that's not the case. And this one from Chris Hausch, I really appreciate this this tweet. He said, "Gil and his guests on VSiN on A Numbers Game will give gambling Twitter a totally different perspective when it comes to sports analytics and betting. Love me some of the dude." He's calling you the dude, Drew. Drew Densick at whale underscore capper. As we've gotten the dude on Drew, and then somebody tweeted, forgive me who, because I don't remember who did, but someone said, what's the show on Bravo that they thought you'd be on?
Oh, yeah.
Below Deck. That's Below right. Deck. Below Deck. You said in another lifetime you would be. All right. French Open. By the way, for those wondering, we did have three at the VSiN picks page. I had three plays. They've already completed. They were all overnight. Hit a big dog on Diane Perry. I don't know how you pronounce her name, but she's French, so I think it's Diane Perry. Plus 236. But
nice one.
But lost on Fiona Ferro. And then J.J. Wolf, who was up 2-0. I didn't see this. Just gacked the match. I don't know if like his conditioning, I didn't see it, but he loses to Nishioka. So it ends up being a split. Like yesterday was basically a split too. So we're trying to make up for the first day, but that's not even a bad beat. You just end up losing that in five. But like yesterday, again, the over in the Arthur Fields match where he just needed to get to four games in the four set. He led the four set 3-3 and then lost that set to Davidovich Fokina 6-3. I had Isner in the fifth set, lose a fifth set tiebreaker 11-9. So there's been one that was going to win, and the opponent took his toys and went home. So it's been rife with bad beats, but it's a long tournament. We'll get there. How has it been for you?
Sounds like you're betting tennis, Gil.
Yes, sir. That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
I've been treading water for the first couple of days here. My numbers are popping favorites.
Good for you, because that's kind of how it goes with this.
Yeah, I've had very few live dogs through round one here, and it's been entertaining getting a good feel for some of these players. I guess that there's been the weird no shows have been sort of the interesting stuff. I guess Kecmanovic losing three straight tiebreakers to go down 3-2 today was a weird one. Kudermatova no showing yesterday was unbelievable.
Bencic and Kudermatova.
Bencic no showing. Although Bencic, we hadn't seen her since Charleston, so it was a little bit of a question mark. Kudermatova made it to the semis of Madrid and Rome, and then just didn't even get up for that match yesterday, which was crazy. And I'm not like dying to get a down an EGA bet right now, but it certainly feels like Q1 is softening a lot. Except for of course. Mira Andreeva,
who lurks.
who went off as a minus 1500 favorite today, and won in absolutely dominant fashion over poor Allison Risk, who's obviously not a great clay player. But that's going to be if Andreeva can continue to put together winning tennis and get to a quarterfinal against Iga, that'll be probably one of the most interesting and important matches you can see of the entire tennis calendar, because you want to know if this is real. Andreeva, if she is kind of coming on as kind of a top 10 player. Krejcikova right now is under distress. Rybakina comes through in the first set against Fervitova, but was under a little bit of distress there. So yeah, just in general, a lot of the other kind of top half women, not really, putting together great tennis so far. So path getting a little bit softer for Iga. And, other than that, excited to see Ons Jabeur this morning look pretty spry.
Yeah.
I don't remember if we even mentioned her name during the Megapod we did with Dan Weston, but
I don't know my numbers. I think we did. And I think you said if we knew. Remember, it came up once. We're like, if we knew she was in good form, she would be way shorter. Yeah.
Yeah, my numbers continue to say that she's like kind of in that she probably should win Q2. But she's going to need to kind of stay fit, I think, and, continue to prove it. She's got a pretty soft path as well. She could very, very likely get to the second quarterfinal. It's been uninteresting so far. And I think just in general, the chalk prevailing is not unexpected, considering how long the runway is for these players on clay leading into Roland Garros,
It's typically true. I've said it many times. Typically true of all the slams. This is the one where the favorites manifest the most. Do you have any plays for the rest of the day here?
Let's see. I looked hard at laying the 8.5 games with Iga, actually.
Yeah.
the rest of the card. Oh, my numbers say, and this is probably one of the least inspiring plays of entire day.
I'm gonna guess.
Okay, go
ahead. I'm gonna guess because I have one lean. I didn't make this play.
Okay, go ahead.
Lady side. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a lean on Yenna in Albone.
Yeah, that was it.
Is that
That's it? Yeah, I have that as a 50-50 match. You can get her at +120. I think there's a small edge there.
Drew and I did not discuss this before the show. We did not.
I don't know if you've seen Claire Lou play tennis this cycle, but it is not great.
I saw
great.
Her live against Iga at Indian Wells. Yeah.
Yikes. Yeah. So yeah, she's regressing pretty aggressively, and I think I don't know. What I saw from In Albone, who I did not know prior to the qualifying, she looks live. So I'll take her as a dog price. But that's it for me today.
That's exactly it for me today. And I didn't even make it official. It's just a lean for me. But that's the story with this. Now, have you made any futures plays at the U.S. Open? I know we talked about it, but have you made those plays yet? Or
Wimbledon? For the U.S. Open, of course. I have Rune in pocket. Okay. I think I got 25-1 was the best price. I bet it down to 16-1. And then that's a bridge too far. Wimbledon's going to be interesting because I'm excited to see what Andy Murray looks like on grass. He's obviously pointed towards this grass cycle as sort of his final, you know, push to do something. And, you know, I think he's live to win Queens. Certainly if Djokovic is not in the field and then Wimbledon, you know, is maybe asking him too much to win 7 best-of-5 matches, but excited to see what Andy Murray looks like. And grass is just fascinating because all of a sudden this is now a super young men's side, and none of these guys have experience or numbers on grass at all. So you can see some pretty awesome chaos there, which is going to be fun. And then on the women's side, it's going to come down to the you know 104 and whichever price the best price you can get between Iga and Sabalenka, Rybakina and Ons Jabeur, I think you have to take it. So yeah.
That's who I'm excited to see on grass. I'm not excited to see Iga. Like, does no one thinks about her? Well, not no one thinks about her, but no one considers her the massive favorite that she is on other surfaces, at least on clay, and probably the favorite people would think of her on hard courts first. Although she would have competition on hardcore too, but no one thinks about it that way necessarily on grass. So that should be interesting as well. All right. Well, good. I appreciate that. And thank you for sort of corroborating my thoughts on the whole MVP thing, that it's not outrage. It's actually just being bummed that people ought to be. Do you bet a proxy market? Like if somebody said right now, okay, should I bet an MVP in the NBA finals not named Nikola Jokic, do you, or do you say no, Nikola's priced correctly or even short?
I don't mind picking up Nichols by taking Jokic instead of a Nuggets series price. Yeah,
there you go.
Right now. Jokic, I think that's a better bet. I know Jamal Murray could have a pretty amazing series offensively. That's entirely possible. But Jokic is so fundamentally important to what they do offensively. And you know, I don't actually know that really I'm worried about the Heat exposing him at all defensively, and just in general, what you saw from him, I thought in the Lakers series showed that he's taken a meaningful step forward defensively. Jokic is to lose, and again, holding my breath, praying for a Heat shocker at game one, and then it's Bomzoi Nuggets.
There you go. Drew Dinsick, everybody. Thank you, Drew, as always.
All right, best of luck.
At @Whale_Capper. Deep Dive and NBC Sports Bet the Edge podcast for Drew. Coming up, Kelly and I on more NBA stuff. Kelly's going to say some stuff next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, authorized gaming partner of the NBA, hits the court with a special playoff parlay insurance offer. Place a same-game parlay of 4 legs or more and get back a bonus bet up to $25. If you miss one leg, that is. Enjoy the playoffs like never before with BetMGM's daily promotions, boosted odds, specials, and parlay selection features throughout the postseason. Log in now or sign up and opt in to get back a $25 bonus bet if one leg in your same game parlay falls short. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi, Nevada, and New York. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. Michael Burns, by the way, randomly pointing out, this is a Patrick McDonald tweet, actually. Let's give credit. But Michael Burns bringing this to our attention. With his T3 finish at the Charles Schwab Challenge, Scotty Scheffler has 14 straight top 20 finishes in stroke play events dating back to October of 2022.
I actually thought it was 15 I saw. But, yeah, it's pretty incredible. I saw someone add up the, you know, just kind of you rolled over every win on that yesterday. Yeah, you've made a nice chunk of change in that amount of time. Yeah, and it's amazing.
He's an ATM machine.
It's weird, Gil. He's doing it without a putter, too.
He's doing it without the flat stick.
Yeah, he's chosen to take like a hockey stick like Happy Gilmore there, and he's not making anything, and he's still doing it.
Imagine if he was just even a fraction better putting.
It's goodness. Wild.
Joe Belicious. And I totally agree with this from Joe Belicious. He goes, for those that had the Celtics 8-1 for the series, curious why the Heat +8 preflop wasn't a no-brainer with an easy hedge play with so much room in the middle. I agree with that completely, and I'm hoping most people who had that did that. But Kelly, in my heart of hearts, what do I believe? I believe a lot of people didn't do it.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people thought that this was going to be a runout for the Celtics.
Well, I mean, look, it's the if it's a numbers play by someone like Drew, he's sticking by his numbers even heading into that game, yep. Right? I would have done it. I absolutely would have done it too. But you know me, I'm obsessed with middles. So, mm-hmm. You know, whatever. I would have loved the chance to hit both.
This is from, Jesse Welch chimed back in. He goes, gosh darn it, Gilly. Sometimes I just need you to ride in the streets with us. I feel like my wiser older brother just explained why he was not mad, but just disappointed in me. Definitely super bummed, though, about the Martin bet. Scotty B726, I think Missoula looks just like Zach Wilson in his post-game interviews. Anyone else see that? Interesting. Should I Ron Burgundy through this one? Roger Jones, a more sports radio topic. In hindsight, do you guys think Spo made a tactical error, small though, by not calling off the Dogs earlier in Game 5, if the Heat were 1% or 2% better, they win Game 6. That's interesting. I didn't think about it at the time. I will say this. I love that he kept in all the starters right to the end yesterday, almost the end. That I loved.
I like that we're playing the hindsight game with the team that won.
Yes.
who cares? They won.
They could have won it sooner is what he said.
I think Boston's playing the hindsight game big time right now.
Well, I know Drew brought this up, you know, and I think he's right. Like, I mean, one series is not another. So I think his strategy or his thinking anyway for the finals, that would be ideal from a betting standpoint. If people started to lose their minds about the Heat after game one, I wouldn't have the same speech because it's the Nuggets. It was all because it was the Celtics. I really think the Nuggets are the better basketball team. By the way, Tyler Hero, by all indications, will be back. And this is interesting about Hero because after game three, I was like, hey, Tyler, if your hand's better, please just take your time. I actually think this works out nicely for him because the Heat didn't run away with it in the end. They struggled to win it in the end. And so I think the return, by the way, this is from Chris Haynes, Miami Heat guard Tyler Hero with a hand fracture is ramping up workouts and is expected to make his return at some point during the NBA Finals, with Game 3 being the likely target, league sources telling the NBA on TNT and Bleacher Report. So not necessarily for Game 1, but for Game 3. But I do think, Kelly, that the Missoula-Spolstra thing, absolutely, to answer your question, absolutely was a huge thing, by and large, in this series. Because if you're just jacking up threes, if your number one strategy is jacking up threes, and what did I say earlier in the series, where it's like, what's the difference between Udoka and Missoula? Missoula was all about offense. That's all he talked about when, you know, he's not being Popovich-like in his press conferences, which I thought was also weird. Hey, bro, you didn't win multiple championships.
I think that's what the Zach Wilson tweet was.
Oh, maybe that's what it was.
I think that's what he means, and yes, I agree with that.
Because I always thought the Spolstra versus Missoula thing, how many times did we say that on this show? I thought Spolstra after Game 6 was like, I wish we'd play Game 7 now. And then Jimmy Butler saying, I guess I'll just have to pass the Game 7 test after having failed in that regard before.
Yeah, he... I don't want to linger too long on the Celtics. We'll spin it forward, but the Mazzulla stuff, it bothers you. It bothers me when he talks at these press conferences after, like, the attitude, like you're talking about
the sideline reporting.
Yeah, too. I don't. It's just like this arrogance that it comes off with. Like, what, dude? What have you done, man?
Yeah.
You know, and he's answering those questions yesterday, like, hey, do you regret, like, the three-point shooting and taking so many threes? No. It's like, you don't want to think about that just for a second. You don't want to think, like, kind of like you're talking about. You don't want to have a multifaceted offense a little bit more. I mean, they came into that game yesterday just thinking, we're going to launch and then we're going to make – basically, they came into that game with the same handicap that I had, where it was just like, well, we're going to make more threes than we did last game, so we'll win. And it was like, all right, no, like, you're just jacking up bad shot after bad shot. Jaylen Brown, who I absolutely love and defend all the time, was god-awful. Like, Tatum goes down. If you're an all-NBA guy on a team like this, like Jaylen Brown is, oh, my gosh, you've got to step up. Where the heck were you? That was embarrassing.
So you're a South Florida guy.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, the Vegas Golden Knights beat the Dallas Stars 6-0, resounding fashion yesterday. I mean, that game was over quick. And it's going to be the Knights against the Panthers. By the way, the Stanley Cup Finals begins on Saturday. The NBA Finals begins the day after tomorrow on Thursday. So in the end, instead of like a massively long wait, we didn't have to wait at all, really, for the NBA Finals. In the end, do two teams from South Florida win their respective titles? Does one or do zero? Kelly Bidlin on South Florida team.
I don't know what the Golden Knights, man. Sure. Well, one of them win. But I don't think it's the Miami Heat.
I don't think so either.
But, yeah, you know, I think
that's the pat answer.
I played Denver game one. I laid the eight.
Okay.
Yeah, I laid the eight. And then I agree. Like, if somehow the Heat win that game, yes, I'll be in on the series then. Otherwise, I'm staying away. You may remember I did make that bet. It's not big, but I made that exact bet.
That's right.
For Denver to beat the Heat after that 3-0 when they went up 3-0.
Dude, I looked before the NBA conference finals. I stared at Denver beating the Heat in an exact at 12-1. Stared at it and I didn't click it.
I remember you bringing that up.
I think this
game one, though. I mean, Raheem Palmer talked about just the historical trends of these teams coming off game sevens. Like, I think that's real. The fact that you're heading into Denver at altitude, you have to play this game. I know you get 2 days of rest in between, but, like, I'm hearing Michael Malone talk yesterday, and he's like, man, we're ready to go. We've done everything we can. We're literally sitting here preparing for two different opponents at this point, and we just want this game to go, game seven to finish, so we know who we're playing. Like, this Denver team is going to be so prepared. I think they are very different from a Boston team in this aspect, right? Not all of their scoring is funneled but through the three-point shooters, right? So you're going to go everything through Nikola Jokic. So the rest versus Russ thing, I don't think has as much of an impact here. Like, I might be worried about rusty three-point shooters. Nikola Jokic banging down low, I'm not worried about. And Bam Adebayo has not matched up very well with him in the past. I think he's going to continue to struggle with that in this matchup. Denver was the best team against the zone this year, so if they throw the zone at him, that's going to be problematic. Because why? Because you have a big man who can pass out of anything. It's a very, very tough matchup for Miami. But, Gil, I already thought Miami beat the two best teams in the NBA. So,
God, like, Kelly's throwing his hands up literally. It's so great.
I would have the Bucks and Celtics still rated higher than the Denver Nuggets heading into this postseason.
Heat would – I think I saw this. Heat haven't won a game in Denver since 2016, I believe that.
That is right. I know they've lost their last four.
Real quick, two things, micro and macro. I'll see if you agree with me. The micro – you agree with me that the Caleb Martin MVP ticket holders have a right to be bummed but not outraged.
I think you're saying it. I think the way you said it was perfect.
Yeah.
Like, it sucks. It was a good bet. Yep. We talked about it yesterday. I got close to making it. I played over his point prop, so I probably should have made it. I really thought he might get it, Gil. Like, and I knew it. I had that voice in the back of my head that they're going to go to Jimmy. Like, no, man, he owned this game. Like, you got to give it to him.
And two, do you agree with what I said four games ago, which is I think that sometimes that those of you who are, like, super into the NBA and super into NBA analytics of a full season, that the Heat are just the tip of the iceberg, that there's going to be other teams like this, that the regular season with load management, both for them and against them, just takes you off the real skill set of a team once they get to the postseason.
It's a further conversation. I don't think there's a whole lot of teams that could do what the Heat did. They're a special group for
it's not a majority, but I think there'll be more than one. We'll come back. Baseball with Mark Borchardt next.